The it being 10 o'clock, as far as I can tell,
it is time for the Energy Stimulus Conference Committee, Senate File 657, to reconvene. A little bit of a roadmap for the day. The Senate reconvene, or Senate convenes at noon. So we have a little bit of business, a little bit of time to work until then. The House is recessed for caucuses, and I think we should be okay to hitch up our salads and get to work here. I'd like to begin, senators, if we could. Yesterday was a day very full of a lot of public input, the two bills being quite different. I think it was a good chance to hear from you all out in the public about the differences between the bills and the different projects. Last night, I think we were able to work with staff to look at some possible ways forward together on the weatherization program. I think staff is working on some language. In fact, I think there's a reason they're not here is because they're working on that language that I think hopefully will provide a lot of flexibility to the department, but enough specificity for the innovation that we'd like to see. I think we also did the very difficult work of agreeing on the energy efficiency and conservation block grants. Both the competitive grants and the public buildings allocation, where we have the discretionary fund. So we have a few issues that I would like to spend the morning on to talk a little bit about the renewable proposals that we have in the bill, as well as the commercial and industrial proposals. We have, just a reminder that we have, in the House language, we had allocated $12 million to the renewables article with flexibility within. The Senate had a more prescriptive approach, although a large portion was $10 million for the renewables for schools. And so I think we'll like to hear from Senator Anderson some more on that piece of it. And then I think we should also spend a little bit of time talking about the commercial and industrial projects, specifically the XL Service Territory Shared Savings Project that the St. Paul Port Authority has offered to administer. And I think we have some questions about the financing, what it's going to take to leverage that project. So I guess that's the roadmap for the morning. Again, our goal is to agree in principle by the end of the day, both on spreadsheet and on language, and let staff put together the bill and sign the conference committee report probably tomorrow, I think, is the reasonable approach there. I'll let Senator Anderson have some thoughts, and then we can roll up our sleeves and get to work.
Did you want to speak? Mr. Chair, you want me to talk about our spreadsheet, or should we just proceed?
Well, why don't we proceed for now, if that's okay with you?
Let's keep going.
So, so Madam Chair, on the spreadsheet, why don't you talk about your spreadsheet, actually? Go ahead.
May I borrow yours? I'm putting in my folder. Mr. Chair and members, I think I mentioned this at the beginning when we went through the side-by-sides, but I just wanted to point out that kind of our rough framework in the Senate was that we have the weatherization dollars plus the block grant, which is, well, I can't remember if we counted that in our two-thirds, one-third. We have the weatherization dollars, $130 million roughly, but that's all for efficiency and retrofitting of homes. And then of the remaining dollars that we have to allocate, we tried to allocate those, thank you, roughly one-third renewables and two-thirds efficiency. And so that was how we came up with the, arrived at the numbers that we did. We wanted to make sure, you know, the stimulus bill, the ARRA bill, does allow us to not just to save energy, but also to build renewable energy projects and to produce renewable energy. So we thought that was important to invest in. But we also know that we'll get the most quick bang for our buck with energy efficiency, so we wanted that to be a higher percentage. There's a great amount of pent-up demand for local governments and schools to do renewable energy projects, and we've heard about that year after year and saw this as an opportunity using the ERA fund to give schools and local governments a chance to put up a wind turbine or put solar panels on their roofs. And so that's why we put a significant amount of dollars in that, $10 million. We also thought that the commercial industrial efficiency program, switching to the efficiency side, was a really cost-effective, fast, shovel-ready, and a way to way to save energy. And, you know, again, this comes from our experience in St. Paul, where we were able to essentially save a company that had almost 500 good-paying jobs, the Rock 10 plant, that was in need of a new energy source. And through the process of helping them find a renewable energy source to power their plant, we discovered that they were a typical company in that they hadn't really explored the extent of energy efficiency savings they could very affordably accomplish in their plant. And so through some really intensive work with experts on energy savings, they found that they could save 20% to 30% of their energy usage at the plant through investments that would pay for themselves in, you know, months, not even years, months. And so we also learned that they are typical in terms of their corporate structure. They have a parent company in another state, and that parent company decides how much they can invest in improvements and in their facility. And the parent company said they're not on the list because of a variety of, you know, it was an expensive plant, and the parent company was not willing to invest in the retrofits in the plant. So they didn't have any access to capital to do it. And the state was able to help and to provide some funding to help with that process. And as a result, they've become a model of what can happen to an industrial facility. They're on track to make these energy improvements, save enormous amounts of energy, and actually have some waste heat available to heat some community, other buildings in the community, maybe the University of Minnesota campus, yet to be determined. But it's shown to us many things, you know, among other things, that businesses often don't have access to that capital, and they often aren't able to justify on their bottom line investments that won't be recovered even in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, and that they often are not aware of the potential for energy savings. And, you know, this was about retaining 500 good-paying jobs for our city. Mm-hmm. So it was just sort of a wow finding for our city that we could accomplish such great things with a little bit of help with, and that it could be, if you put it into a revolving account, you could do it very cost-effectively for other businesses. So that's why we put a significant dollar amount into the shared savings proposal, because we thought the Port Authority could really, there's lots of businesses out there across XL service territory that could benefit from the same process.
Well, I'm chairing today. Excuse me. I'm still in the mode from yesterday.
I have the same problem. Mr. Chair, can I just make one more comment?
Absolutely.
I just want to highlight one other area in our bill, and that's the solar. And I know you also had a focus on solar in one of your proposals, and we had a lot of discussion about this in our committee about how important it is right now for Minnesota to establish a leadership position on solar technology. If we want to be one of the states that's a leader, we got to act now, because the costs, the supplies are going up, the costs are going down, other states are getting into the solar market, and it's sort of now is the cutting edge time. If we want to lead. So we thought it was important for us to invest in solar right now, and that could really help Minnesota.
Well, Well, thank you, Senator Anderson. I think, you know, one of the things we heard in the Green Jobs Task Force is that opportunity in solar. And it's too bad Representative Saylor isn't in the room at the moment, but I think that provided that we can work out an agreement with the governor to get a signature on the bonding bill, it sounds like there's agreement in the Senate and the House to fund the solar certification laboratory that is going to, from the bonding portion and the finance bill that's sitting on the desk waiting for some wet ink today as well. Included $500,000 for the non-bondable portion of the solar certification lab, and I think that's a big step forward, and I think that one of the things that we should look at is making sure to capitalize on that and looking at the big picture on that level. I think what I'd like to do is to hear a little bit more on or have some discussion, I guess, among the committee first on the commercial and industrial portion. The House put $5 million, if you look on page 11, R11, excuse me, there's a, the House has $5 million for commercial industrial facilities for both efficiency and renewables, and the Senate language has $7 million. We had some discussion yesterday about the Port Authority project. But I guess I'd like to hear from conference committee members about the importance, how much import we should put on the commercial and industrial opportunities. I can just tell you a little bit, on the House side, we felt like this was an area of need. I think we heard from the department yesterday talking about businesses that are either shuttered or on the verge of closing, where, as Senator Anderson said, sometimes there really is an issue of capital to get the efficiency on the table and actually get those projects rolling. So I guess looking to committee members for thoughts on either the overarching principle or even looking at specific language on R11 to R12, and then we'll also have, I think, as part of the same, while we're talking about the demand side, we also have the Emerging Renewable Energy Industries Grant Program on R12 that we have both agreed to fund at $2 million. So if you have comments on that section as well, I'm open to conversation, and if members would like to hear from any specific folks in the public or the department again on this program, now's the time. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will say I think that it's very important that the specifically I'd like to first talk about the public building renovation. I like the amount that the department actually has put in of the, for instance, in the state energy program of $22.5 million, because I think those are projects that will put folks to work in large numbers right away that are currently not working. For instance, we have 30% unemployment in the electricians trade, and that's, I think, exemplary of the other trades, too, where there's – and a lot of these folks, specifically electricians – and carpenters would be able to do this work. They would be some of those that we'd be calling back right away. And I think if we look at it as kind of a 2-3-tiered approach, I think the more that we can get here, that money would be able to get on the ground. And I think that's the idea of the federal stimulus. And so I would like to see a lot of money in that area, the commercial and industrial also. I think a lot of those, the companies are ready to roll, and they have the ability to issue contracts right away and put larger number of people to work, and then at the same time where we can work on the residential, which I believe will follow. So I'm hopeful as we move forward that that we'll be able to put a significant amount of emphasis in that area.
Thank you. Representative Hilty, did you?
No, at this time, okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative McNamara. I think that's really an important place to put a lot of emphasis, and it'll have a lot of bang for the buck. I wanted to comment. Also, you mentioned the electrician trades, and if we all the whatever we put into solar installations will also put electricians immediately to work as well. And as you know, they're trained, they're ready to go. They're really, a lot of them are very interested in getting solar related work as well. So we have a good workforce there that's ready to go.
Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, the job creation is really critical, but I'd like to also focus on the incentive toward investment in energy on the part of our industrial, our manufacturing partners here. And am I too close to the mic?
No, I believe it was Mr. Pomeroy's fault again.
And I think this is an incredible opportunity for getting buy-in in the commercial industrial area to an energy efficiency model. So, and as companies experience the savings, that's an investment that I believe they'll be motivated to continue even after the stimulus dollars. So I think it's an incredible opportunity for a partnership.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, again, give me till after lunch, I suppose. On the Xcel project, and I'm actually deliberately calling it that because I think that it really will serve half the state, and it's because it's the Xcel territory, and I have to imagine that it's actually more than half of the commercial and industrial customers in the state, although I don't know that for sure. We don't need Xcel to tell us that, but if they might just be able to send a note to confirm that maybe they have more than 50% of that base. My concern with the CNI grants is that we want to be sure not to be incenting things that have or be paying for things that have other funding streams. For instance, the commercial industrial SIP opportunity. Do you know in the development of that model, of that financing model, whether how much has been discussed in terms of that SIP is going to pay for everything that they can? Absolutely. Is that language we want to put in? Is that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think Ms. Lauder and Mr. Klein have a pretty good sort of breakdown of examples of how that would be split up, the shared contribution of SIP and the revolving fund or whatever it is. I don't know if you want to ask them. They can. I don't have those numbers on the tip of my tongue.
Well, why don't
or Xcel could answer that.
Why doesn't someone from the Port Authority, someone from the Xcel project, whether it's the Port Authority or someone else, come forward? And I think what I'd like to hear some discussion on is the financing component. And how much, Senator Anderson, did you anticipate of the $7 million actually going to this project?
Well, Mr. Chair, we didn't make a decision on that. We were, again, as I introduced the bill, I forget, it asked for $20 million or something, a huge amount just for Xcel service territory, and we decided to change it so that it would be clearly a statewide program. And so I think a significant amount would be appropriate, but we're kind of leaving it up to the agency to work that out.
Well, welcome to the committee. I see Mr. Pfeiffer, Mr. Klein, and Mr. Strom. Whoever would like to proceed, go ahead.
Well, I'm Sheldon Strom. I'm with the Center for Energy and Environment, and I've been helping the Port Authority develop the utility conservation plan along with Xcel, and we're helping them also develop their financing plan, but they're the experts on financing. In answer to some of these questions, first of all, I think the idea here is that this wouldn't duplicate what utilities are already doing. What's happening now is utilities have got tools that reach a significant number of customers, but they don't have tools that reach a lot of other customers. So that what the Port Authority is proposing is to work with Xcel, and for the customers that just naturally participate in the Xcel program, that works great. For other customers that need more hand-holding and innovative financing, that's where the Port Authority approach would come in. So really what it's doing is making the utility programs more effective, leveraging more utility spending, and as Senator Anderson said, really creating a lot of jobs and really helping these companies. And I just wanted to mention something that the department mentioned yesterday. There's two different versions of this in the House and Senate, And the department was kind of implying that they're both great ideas. And I want to suggest that maybe that's true, because one idea is you work with local governments or the port authorities, and for they do big projects and they administer those projects. But maybe you could also do, like the House says, have other projects that are maybe grants directly to companies, not duplicating utility programs, but maybe facilitating implementation that utilities can't get in certain sectors. So I think that these are both terrific ideas. They're probably the best job generator and energy savings generator and carbon reduction generator that we've got.
Thank you. Any additions, Mr. Pfeiffer?
Mr. Chair, I'm Dan Pfeiffer with XL Energy. I guess I'll just add that, and that some of this will probably be what I said yesterday, we like this program for many reasons. One of the reasons is what Mr. Strom just mentioned. This brings a strong financing arm to the table and an effective channel to the market that we cannot duplicate given the resources that we have. And we know for a fact that we've got business customers who have energy conservation plans sitting on their shelves. They haven't been able to get them financed. They haven't been able to pull the trigger for other reasons, competition for internal capital that goes into either retaining jobs or other parts of their business. So the fact that we can entice them to do the energy conservation through this program, help them keep and grow jobs, is with an organization that's got a track record of success in this area is what we think is a real win-win.
And Mr. Chairman, one other follow-up on that. I was just talking to Mr. Klein this morning about the discussion yesterday about a program maybe that's broader than the Port Authority model. And one thing that might happen is the Port Authority develops these innovative financing strategies. Maybe those same strategies can be picked up by other parts of the state or even administered by the state program. So I think there's a real lot of upside for these projects.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I understand the idea of the revolving loan component, we keep the money circulating. We don't consume it. Is that true?
That is exactly true.
Mr. Klein.
Mr. Chair.
If you could identify yourself for the record, Mr. Klein.
Sorry. Peter Klein. I'm Vice President of Finance with the St. Paul Port Authority. And that is exactly what our intent is to loan the funds out, leverage them as much as possible through participation of SIP with XL and other funds, other EDA funds in the areas. If we're working with St. Cloud, their EDA, I'm sure, would be happy to participate in part of this funding. Just as in St. Paul, we would be happy to participate in some of the funding through other funds. We intend to leverage the funds as much as possible, but also revolve them, and so that as they get paid back, that they would be available for additional businesses to invest in energy conservation.
Senator Rummel.
So, Mr. Chair, if we're trying to make the most of the dollars we have, I think the revolving loan aspect that we have on this Senate language is really doubly valuable. And I had another comment. It went right out of my head. It'll come back.
Okay. Mr. Klein, did you have anything else to add while Senator Rummel's coffee kicks in? But I think it just did. So.
What I'm wondering is, in the House language, were you thinking of having any kind of a match to go along with your grants?
Senator Rummel, I think if you look at on R11, paragraph C at the bottom, R19, or 919, excuse me, we really wanted, I think we were expressing a lot of deference to the department, knowing that I think there's I'm hearing around the table as well, a pretty strong consensus for leveraging and stretching these dollars, turning the $200 million into, I hope that we can actually tell the public we're turning $200 million into $400 or $500, if not more. I think we're probably going to be close to that by the time we wrap this up. But so I think in intent, yes, and in prescription, no, not yet. Go ahead, Senator Rummel.
So then, Mr. Chair, One of the other things that we heard yesterday quite strongly is that in order to access the second 50% of the ARRA funds, we have to show that we can get on the ground quickly, so both of these do that, but that we get the most mileage for the dollars. And so that's why I'm trying to compare the two, which one will get us the most mileage, the most energy savings for the dollars.
I think that's a good point, Senator Rummel. Mr. Klein, what's the timeline? You know, if the governor signs the bill early next week, the department gets rocking and rolling, and you get the check soon. When are we going to see jobs? When are we going to see energy savings?
Mr. Chair, I have personally met with over a half a dozen companies, most of which are outside of the city of St. Paul. In those meetings, they've indicated tenfold the amount of funding that we would be able to provide to them at this point. And those projects, they've already had energy audits, they've already had engineering studies, and I believe that most of those could be implemented this summer. And the payback starting by the end of the year. What our intent was to have a demonstration program, though, and to really show how it works in outstate Minnesota, how it works in metro area, how it works with large companies and with smaller companies, and to be able to demonstrate to other future programs how this would work, both in the state and nationally. And so I'm certainly not going to allocate all of the funds to the half dozen companies that I've met with, and perhaps they may or may not meet the underwriting criteria that we would look for, but the projects are teed up right now and they are ready to go.
And Mr. Klein, do we have a sense of how many businesses, how many jobs are on the brink for whom this funding and this total package, loan guarantees, revolving loan, the SIP incentives, some stimulus funds, could make a difference between being in existence in a year or not, or cutting workforce or not?
I have a meeting with a company outside of St. Paul on Wednesday of next week, and absolutely this is what I'm told is going to be a make or break on whether it stays, and it is in excess of 1,000 jobs. Now, as we get into the program, whether that specific company is one, again, the underwriting is going to be key, and whether that is a company that we choose to help fund, it needs to be determined. But again, it's outside of St. Paul, it's high-tech jobs, and a lot of them. And our understanding is that their energy costs are a key factor on whether they're going to move their facilities offshore or not.
Mr. Pfeiffer, one of the things that we heard in the Green Jobs Task Force is we talked about commercial industrial help. Heard pretty clearly from the Chamber of Commerce from Mr. Blazer, who was the chamber member on the task force, was we don't while there's interest in this specific project, he said, we're not doing a good enough job to access the existing SIP dollars that, in his words, our members help pay for. One of my principles throughout the bill, and I think the House has really stuck to this pretty stringently, is to not be incenting and paying stimulus funds or any funds for something that for which there is another resource, another opportunity out there that can meet the same need. I want to be sure that this project is truly being complementary to SIP, and if you could maybe share with the committee what Xcel is doing to work with the Chamber and others to meet the needs of these businesses that I think are really seeing a tough time here and have not taken advantage of pretty major funding sources out there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a company, I don't think there's a chamber of commerce that we don't belong to in the state of Minnesota. We have strong relationships with all of the chambers. We leverage those relationships to get access to our customers, particularly in the commercial and industrial sector, so that they're aware of what we can offer in terms of energy conservation programs. We also have a direct sales force that goes door to door, if you will. Several folks, I don't know how many dozen today, but they're the ones calling on our large industrial customers like Northwest, Delta Airlines, all of the federal facilities, all of the large commercial buildings. So I think we do a good job of leveraging the partners that we have out there in the business community to make sure that our programs are, that there's awareness of them. And then we you know, we consider them a great channel to market when it comes to getting information back and forth and obviously getting programs implemented. I think the challenge we find today is not one of awareness so much as it is how do we pull the trigger on programs that we're interested in doing from a customer perspective. That's why we think this provides a great opportunity. It'll take a lot of projects that are maybe on the cusp of being done. It'll provide the nudge that allows them to get done. And again, we like the energy savings. We like the jobs component primarily.
Mr. Pfeiffer, I want to be sure that we can tell the public that we're doing what I said before your comments. And I think that there's more outreach happening, and the chamber members are doing a better job at, and I think they need to over the next year or two to really vigorously go after that funding opportunity and the help. But I do want to be able to stand up in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. I want all of us to be able to say every single dime was spent wisely and on a project that where this was going to make the difference, or where there was no funding, no other funding option, or this was used on top of, not instead of. If we were to put language that to this point, or to this, to the spirit of my comment about must not duplicate or be redundant, where other sources are available, must be on top of, you know, must essentially the supplanting language that we've been dealing with on the constitutional amendment. Is that something, Mr. Klein, Mr. Pfeiffer, that you would be comfortable with?
Mr. Chair, let me respond to that. I think when it comes to energy conservation, the burden of the state's 1.5% goal falls primarily on the energy companies. And we take that very seriously. And I don't think you need to be concerned. I wouldn't think the committee needs to be concerned that we're not going to be spending resources or going after projects that aren't going to provide the best value. Certainly, the department has great oversight on that. They're the ones that hold us to the cost-effectiveness test. They're the ones that review our plans. And they're the ones who give us the guidance on where we should be focusing our resources. I think anyone who comes along in addition to the energy companies these days, are probably the ones who should have the burden of making sure that they're not duplicating the resources that our ratepayers are already paying for.
Thank you. Mr. Klein?
Mr. Chair, when we developed this program, we absolutely determined that and decided that we were not going to go after the lowest hanging fruit, the projects that we're going to get done without this. Lighting retrofits, those types of things that the CEE already enhances. So our intent is to do projects that would not be done without this funding.
Thank you. Any other? I'd like to bring the department up in a second because, I'll bring the department up in a second. Any other questions from conferees for the testifiers at the table right now? Great. Thank you very, very much, gentlemen. If Mr. DeFebri and Mr. Glahn might be able to come to the table. Thank you again for the long day yesterday. I appreciate the exhaustive run-through of the bill. I hope your salad breakfast was tasty, Mr. DeFebri. When the department gave us a general framework a couple of months ago, I believe the line item for this industrial shared savings or CNI program was $2 million. As you know, the House language gave $5 million with a general thought of splitting evenly between this kind of program and direct grants, as you see in our language on R11. Yesterday you said that you're hearing more and more interest from businesses that are for whom energy is really making a difference between staying or leaving. Do you have more to add to that and maybe more to comment on your $2 million recommendation?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Do I need to reintroduce myself?
Yeah, please do.
I am Bill Glahn. I am the Director of the Minnesota Office of Energy Security and a Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. To your question, when we put the plan together, it was before we had gotten the guidance from the Department of Energy, which included the job creation goals as well as the energy savings requirements, and before we understood this, multi-step process of it. So in the light of that discussion and in light of the meetings I've had with industry around the state and with my staff have had with small commercial and commercial customers and non-residential customers, I would have put considerably more funds into the non-residential. I think I mentioned a figure of at least $10 million yesterday to the committee. We had a couple million dollars for industrial shared savings. We had $3 million for the Ingenuity grants. Again, that was, as I recall, for businesses more of the startup variety and that. So, but I would, hindsight's 2020 and the benefit of several months more experience, I think we can easily justify the expenditure of considerably more funds in this area. I was pleased to hear Mr. Strom reiterate the both and. There are places for both of these programs. There are places for where a loan would be just what the doctor ordered for a company through a revolving loan fund, but there are other places where it's a grant that could be done more quickly and more targeted might be more useful rather than going through the underwriting and all the other criteria you would with a loan. So, but I also hear what you're saying about we want to make sure when we get to the end of this process, we feel confident that the money was well spent, it was well invested, it wasn't displacing other funds that were more that could have been utilized or were also available. So that being said, I appreciate the endorsement from Representative McNamara about our public buildings thing, but I would like to see much more than what we had proposed and more than, I guess, either House had proposed specifically for the non-residential portion. And as for language that would I understand what your goal is to not displace other funds and make sure monies are well spent. I'd be careful, though, of writing more restrictions into this. I'm trying to not introduce delay and not introduce requirements I would hope I wouldn't misinterpret them, but might make projects tougher to do rather than easier to do. I hope I was clear on that.
Right. Thank you, Director Glahn. Before we get to you, Mr. DeFebri, if you could hold your lettuce for a second. If we were to increase, I would just want to make sure I understood you, Director Glahn, that if we were to increase the investment in the commercial industrial area, essentially, if you take the $2 million for shared savings and the $3 million for the Ingenuity grants, a total of $5 million, and doubling that to $10 million, where do you see finding that $5 million from? I mean, obviously, we're in a zero-sum game here because we can't increase the size of the pie, but in terms of effective delivery, where do you see where you would recommend a slightly lower number than what you came to the table with?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I again appreciate the good word about the public buildings program, but as valuable and as meritorious that program is, I think you're right, it's a zero-sum game. You have to get the money somewhere. I would have reduced that amount to make up for it, as well as perhaps reducing some of the – I'm having real trouble with this reading across here.
You and the rest of us.
Right. And so, yeah, and the residential energy. And, again, we heard lots of good testimony and personally aware of the difficulty cracking that residential market. But between the low-income weatherization, and I think we're still going to end up with considerable amounts of money going into residential through the state energy plan, I think we're still going to have a lot of money going after that sector, even with shifting money toward the non-residential portion. And, again, we've heard a lot about this iterative process. It's a tough nut to crack, and so I don't think there's an expectation that all that money would be flowing at once to homeowners, that we need to go and try different things, try some innovative things, see what works, see where we could put our resources toward what turns out to be the better strategies. But I do feel pretty confident that if we had a grant program for non-residentials, or we could and a revolving load program, those monies would flow relatively quickly out the door. So I would those would be the two areas I would look at from what we had put forward.
Thank you. Mr. DeFebri.
Well, Mr. Chair, just real quick on that.
Senator Anderson.
Just on that point, I'm looking to see if MHFA is here, because it sort of raises a question for me. Maybe we could ask her to come up next or now or whatever. I'm sorry if she already answered this question, but I'm wondering how much they've spent on their loan program for efficiency in the past and how much they think they could put out the door, you know, any kind of estimates about the need for those dollars. Just to give us a comparison would be helpful.
Ms. Blankenship, if you could hold on 1 second. I just want to see if Mr. DeFebri had something directly to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, it would be backing up to another point.
Thank you. Ms. Blankenship.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeanette Blankenship with Minnesota Housing. And in our two-year affordable housing plan, we estimated that we would spend about $65 million in home improvement loans through this program. In the past, we've seen about 55% of those loans include energy efficiency component, such as replacing a furnace or water heater, or insulation, et cetera, windows. We actually, because of the market, have only moved about $20 million, so we have a good $40 million of capacity to make loans, and which we would use then the stimulus money to leverage that. So in the past, we've seen about 55%, so we do think that there is a demand out there if you decided to put the recommendation towards it.
And Ms. Blankenship, that 55% includes an energy efficiency component but doesn't represent the entirety of that. Each of those loans in the 55% were focused only on energy efficiency. Am I correct in interpreting your statement?
Mr. Chair, the 55% represents the proportion of money, the proportion of money spent of borrowers. So borrowers, the proportion they spent on energy efficiency components. I could look up what the percent of, I think it was around 30% that were purely energy efficiency.
Okay.
That they only did energy efficiency improvements. Most others do some other improvement. We don't typically include roofs, for example, as an energy efficiency improvement, though it could improve that. And again, with this funding, we wouldn't be using it on anything but energy efficiency improvements.
Senator Anderson.
Chair, thank you. I think you said 30% that were just energy. That last number, I missed it.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, yes.
Thank you.
That's what I recall, and I can double-check that figure.
Sure. And, Mr. Chair, then I want to ask Commerce or Housing Finance, I'm slow to adapt here to the new name. That's like how many years old?
It's not Housing
MMB,
is it?
It's not that new anymore.
Sorry.
When I chaired the Housing Committee, it was MHFA. You know, that stuff just sticks with you.
We're still MHFA.
Oh, you
Senator
are.
Anderson, but we do business as Minnesota Housing, so it's not as much of a mouthful.
Oh.
Say the four words.
Okay. That's really clear. So I'm right either way.
Yes.
Yeah, that's helpful. Good.
Just don't call them MMB, and you're okay. The House does not call anybody MMB right now.
The question is, we had put in our bill, and we've talked about the importance of having other options besides loans for residential, and I think, you know, just sort of my gut tells me that if we had grants to put out there for people to do furnaces or whatever, it would go really fast, a lot faster than loans. And so grants or rebates, and if some of this residential money went to that purpose, could anybody hazard a guess about what, how much you could put out the door for residential energy improvements that would be cost, you know, really good investments quickly? Any guesses?
Mr. DeFebre seems armed and ready to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeremy DeFebre, and I'm with the Office of Energy Security in the Department of Commerce. In part, an answer to that is predicated on whether we're looking at a 25% grant or a higher level of grant within the context of the loan program. We were looking at an average of 25% of the cost. I would say, in a near-term basis, it would be anywhere between. My feeling is that because you'd be looking for other financing for those improvements, that there's less likelihood within the demographic that we're aiming for to be able to program just a standalone grant. If we were looking at a higher income demographic above the Housing Finance Agency requirement of 93,000, then we could probably program more grant funds as a standalone.
There's no way that we should go.
Okay. That's interesting. All right. And then how, do you have any idea, Mr. Chair, on
Senator Anderson?
Just give us a ballpark of how much, or would that be total guesswork?
And we'd love to hear total guesswork from you, Mr. DeFebre. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be total guesswork.
Okay. Fine. Then I can guess probably, maybe not as well as you, but I can guess pretty well. Thank you.
Mr. DeFebre, to the specific industrial shared savings program, I mean, there's compelling testimony, and I know that you are on the hook and have been for years as the operations manager and signing financials for the office. And I think the original proposal was $20 million of funding, and it's come down significantly. You ended up at two. The House was essentially at two and a half. Can you comment a little bit on your thoughts on what can be done for $2.5 million? Mr. DeFebre.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think in our initial proposed allocation of funds, I believe we were probably more optimistic on the port's ability to leverage a little bit of stimulus money to attract private capital to the program. I think the realities of the market right now lead us to a conclusion that $2 million, $2.5 million would not be adequate to do that. So I believe, you know, the types of numbers that are being talked about in the $5 million range may be more realistic.
Well, Mr. DeFebre, I mean, we have a commitment already for $2 million for manufacturers for the Emerging Renewables Grant Program that I think is a worthy cause. And I think we'll have to talk some about the size of those grants and the purpose and kind of focus. But, you know, I guess my concern is that we have some geographic balance, not only on the public building renovation side. I think we're going to have it on the housing and weatherization sides. But I want to make sure that, for instance, Senator Dill, Representative Brainard, Representative Saylor, well, I guess all the House members, Representative McNamara, you're in Xcel service territory. Is that correct?
Actually, Mr. Chair, my home in Hastings is Dakota Electric.
Oh, that's right.
Because it's an annex part of Hastings. The original corporate city limits are XL.
So There you go. I think Representative McNamara is Mr. DeFebri, it's sort of spotty where you and I live, where we have munis, co-ops, and XL. And in fact, sometimes it's which side of the street do you live on. So I want to make sure that we don't get businesses excluded because they're on one side of the street or the other, but we have a limited pot to spend. Just your thoughts on how to achieve that balance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the problem is that with the limited amount of funds we have, we cannot do all things for all people. I believe the approach that that the Port Authority is taking does include, essentially within XL's service territory, a large portion of the state's population and a large portion of the manufacturing in the state. The Port Authority program, if successful, is going to be very replicable elsewhere. But in order to attract the outside capital that's going to be necessary to do this program on a larger scale, we have to demonstrate success in this initial project.
Senator Rummel, did you have a question? You just extremely engaged conferee.
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought I heard testimony that it's possible that the Department of Commerce would be interested in even higher number in this allocation. And would it be possible to take a portion of both or take all of the Senate language and allocate some for individual grants? Is there a way to blend them both? And the Department of Commerce, you know, suggested they could come down from their allocation for public renovations in order to do that.
I think, Senator Rummel, I think you're going right to the heart of a little bit of the squeezing of the bubble here, that or the balloon. And I think that's the question. I think I'm obviously interested in the being wise about the choices we make on those individual grants. But I do want to see that we are making a difference with these resources. I think we're hearing from the Port Authority that within the XL service territory that is a wise way to go. But I think there's some concern. You know, if we get close to the department's recommendation of $10 million, and this is only using their, this is a if, and we were to do what Mr. DeFebri is recommending, and the renewable grant program, that would leave only 30% of the commercial industrial for other pieces. And I want to make sure that allocation could actually work and make a difference. I know that we have a. The political reality is that sometimes we have to distribute to pass bills. I don't want to see that with this bill. I want to see us actually make a difference, to reach a tipping point in a few key areas. I think the City of Duluth project is one where I think it gets there, makes a tipping point, leverages funds. We're hearing that on the Port Authority project as well. So I think we should think a little bit about those other grants. Representative McNamara, did you have something on this?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think this is kind of making sense. And Mr. Glahn, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Where I was really excited and thought that the public buildings, and then I got thinking a little bit, is it maybe because in the public building case, we've been a little bit more on top of the energy savings and maybe have already done some of that? In industry, it's been harder to bite the bullet. Where I'm coming from, then, I'm wondering, why would we not want to give you? I was interested in your comment that as this has developed over the last few months, we see it from a little different perspective. I'm thinking that we need to give you more flexibility because your snapshot vision today, I'm concerned, is going to change as this develops. And I go back to the flood money when we did Rushford. We gave so much money for the residents and so much for the business to help them get back on their feet. And what we found out was we gave too much to the business and not enough to the residents, and didn't have the flexibility to move that money. I'm wondering if, as this vision changes, first if I could get you about the public building, and then I'm wondering if we shouldn't be giving you flexibility in these numbers to where we would could potentially be strapping things down and end up not being as flexible as we need to be.
Director Vaughn.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, to the public buildings, again, I don't know if Ms. Dreff has yet made it in today.
She's not here, but actually Mr. Wozlowski is here.
But I'll start off with an answer, and then admin could come chime in here. My understanding of where we are at public buildings, we've made huge strides in that because we've had a very organized program, a very methodical approach to cataloging the buildings, benchmarking their energy usage against one another and against some type of buildings, you know, so office buildings we benchmark against other government office buildings, other office buildings. So we have created a lot of information and a lot of data, and we had coincidentally reached the point where we were ready to go with a lot of renovation work and a lot of efforts along those lines, and this funding opportunity came along at a fortuitous point in the evolution of that program, which is, I think, why we were thinking early on that it would be a great idea to put money at because we had this thing ready to go. But at the same time, to your question about why is that, well, it's a little easier to organize a program when you have everything under one umbrella, you know, the state government and government in general, whereas in the private sector, you have lots of individual actors who are doing stuff on their own, a little bit of the herding cat situation. So I think that's the answer to your question. We've had a program in place, and we've been making a lot of progress with it, and whereas the private sector, they're off on their own, and there's not that central planning aspect to it. But back to your flexibility, I appreciate those comments because that was our thinking in wanting to put forward some language that would give us the flexibility to do some mid-course corrections if we were, because if we had gone with the plan that we had proposed originally to the committees of origin, I'd be a very unhappy man today because I'd have tied my hands in a way that wouldn't give me the flexibility I felt I would need today just 90 days later. So it would be good if we had some aspect of the plan that would allow us for when we're going for that second 50% of the money from the feds, that we could go and look back on what was working with the first slice of money. I think it's the first 25% or so at that point, and see where our wins were and see if we couldn't redirect some monies. But, of course, we would want to do it in consultation with you folks to let you know that despite all the great conversations we had at the front end of this process, here's how circumstances have changed, here's what we're thinking about doing, and receive your input and your thoughts on the matter. But with that, I'll back up a little bit and see if Wayne has something to add on the public buildings.
Senator Prettner-Solon had a question, I believe.
Mr. Chair, it really does make a difference if I jump in at this point or later, but I do agree with you about setting our priorities and wanting to have an impact. But I also agree with Representative McNamara. I think that we need to maintain enough flexibility that we're not sending our federal dollars back. We want to make sure that we expend every dollar, and also if there's the opportunity to be eligible for additional dollars so that we can spend these as quickly as possible. Those would be my goals as we move forward.
Thank you. Mine as well.
I'm sorry. I also apologize for not being here as much as I would like to. My heart is here.
We understand that you're occupied with the Health and Human Services Conference Committee, and I think given the issues, we appreciate that you have to step away and engage there. Just a reminder, members and testifiers, that the static we hear is from cell phones being active too close to the mic. So I know that given the House and Senate being in session and other conference committees, it's a necessity this time of the year. But if we could keep them off the table, that may help. And if not, we'll have to ask people to turn them off. So, Mr. Wozlowski, we had had a conversation. Well, we've had many, many conversations, and I think as early as January when we had initially thought that just the efficiency money might be able to roll quickly and put folks to work about kind of fleshing out projects that admin has responsibility for and availability to move forward. At the request of the department, we ended up doubling our investment from $4 million to $8 million in federal funds to match and leverage with the PB lease purchase and other mechanisms, specifically for state buildings that you have, for which you have responsibility. Can you maybe just give us a real quick timeline on if the governor signs the bill early next week, where will we see job creation? What's the potential list today of projects? What's the total reach, do you think?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Wayne Wislosky. I'm the Director for Real Estate and Construction Services within the Department of Administration. And I'd first of all start with a comment that obviously we would defer to the Department of Commerce on the over and Director Glahn on the overall priorities for the state within this bill. And I'll just speak to the demand related to the state buildings. Last session, as many of you know, I think a landmark bill passed that gave us a financing tool for the first time to do energy efficiency projects in public buildings, both at the state and local level. And the idea has always been to try to leverage both the federal dollars that we have available in this financing tool to go as far as we possibly can. The demand for, and I think you've heard that, you know, with competition for internal capital also applies to state agencies, and obviously their primary mission is related to program delivery. If it's a correctional facility, they're concerned about meeting their missions related to corrections. Energy efficiency projects don't necessarily get to the top of the list when competing for limited dollars. So we think, you know, overall we're talking just at the state agency level, you have 27 million square feet of space, over 5,000 buildings. There's certainly significant demand out there for energy efficiency dollars. Minsky would also be part of this program. And so if you add in roughly an equivalent amount of space, we're close to 50 million square feet of space that we'd be looking at. And the process that we go through, early in January, we just surveyed the agencies and asked them what would be a list, your list, facility managers, of what you'd like to see done from energy efficiency improvements. And so I have lists from all the agencies, from MNSCU, from DNR, Corrections, Human Services, on what they'd like to see happen. We are at the same time working with the Center for Energy and Environment to put together the standards for screening those projects and really making sure that they are cost effective and what's the highest priorities within the limited dollars that we have. So I would just say that we're, you know, for the first time in state government, we have another financing mechanism. We think it's a good thing to be able to, if we're doing $1 million project with a state agency, to be able to say, well, we'll pay $200,000 or $300,000 of that out of the federal funds, and the rest we're going to finance. The agency is going to be obligated to pay back that financing, but hopefully the energy savings are going to be there to actually cash flow that.
And Mr. Wislosky, if I remember right from the lease purchase, the PB program, that even though the energy savings largely pay for the capital up front annually, that there's a little bit of nominal savings as well realized by the building owner. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chair, members, that could be the case. Obviously, it's going to depend a little bit on whether energy prices are going up or down, on whether they actually are going to see a positive operating budget impact. But eventually, after the debt service is paid back, one of the things we're looking at is making sure the useful life of whatever measure we're doing, if it's a lighting measure or boiler replacement, that it's obviously goes well beyond the time where we've paid back the debt service. So at that point, then you would hopefully see a positive operating budget impact for state agencies.
And I just want to point out for members that, this is the sort of thing that we should have been doing 20 and 30 years ago. And obviously, energy alone is not responsible for our $6.4 billion deficit, but, you know, as our local school districts and local units of government are struggling with their budgets, well, we heard in from Chair Hilty's small city of Cromwell, where the lighting for the streets, street lighting, is a significant portion of their very tiny budget. You know, just as one example of things that we can do to actually help our schools and our local units of government. So I think we're, as we try to allocate resources, I think it's going to be clear that we need to keep this as a priority and not dip, not cut too deeply if we have to do other things that means real jobs. But I would like to see us make a commitment not only to the state, but also to our local units of government and our school districts to make sure that we're giving them another tool and another way to cope in this difficult time. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Glahn, Director, I have one more question. If I remember right, you have talked about a day next Tuesday, I believe, the 12th, if I'm remembering my dates correctly, that you have an application due into the feds. If we're not able to reach agreement here on a bill or Governor Plenty doesn't get it signed, do you feel confident? Can you move forward without a bill here? What would happen if we didn't do a bill? And is the reality, if you could move forward, would that be with the most flexibility?
Mr. McNamara, or sorry, Representative McNamara, is that your threat of a filibuster here? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I'm just curious to hear their answer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think Director Glahn gave a shot at a filibuster last night, but he's depends on whether he went to the restroom and ate a big breakfast. See how. Here's your chance.
Mr. Chair, I did warn you it was going to take a while last night. So, Mr. Chair, to your question, Representative McNamara, we do have a for the state energy program. Have we already submitted the plan for the weatherization? Is that correct?
The detailed plan is also due the 12th.
Okay, so we have the detailed plan for the weatherization and the state energy office. That's the $130 million plus the $54 million. That's due on Tuesday. We also have the detailed plan for the block grant, and that's due on the 26th of the month. But those two, we are going to submit a plan to meet the federal deadline because I'm not willing to jeopardize the $190 million that we have available to us because I didn't follow the instructions from the feds. So we'll submit a plan. And the question is, will this process have reached a conclusion or not? So my, you know, to end, I hope you'll appreciate how reluctant I am to answer hypothetical questions. And how rare this occasion will be that I will address your hypothetical. In the event we do not have a signed bill, we'll submit a plan, and I will try to make it as I will try to have it reflect the spirit of wherever we left off in the process, but at the same time giving us the flexibility should we complete this process at some later date to be able to adjust to reflect the final product.
Well, Director Glahn, I know Senator Anderson has a comments she wants to make as well, but I'm just again going to reiterate that we will have an agreement by the end of the day today. As we, I mean, I think that we're making actually productive progress here in this hour that we've been meeting so far. We have a little bit. I'd like to discuss the renewable portion before we have to recess shortly before noon, and that'll give us some guidance. But we hope to have an agreement between the House, the Senate, and the office, including the governor's office, by the end of the day today so that you can get back to work on writing that plan and so we can get these paychecks rolling as soon as we can here in the state. Senator Anderson, then Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, I understand your question, but I just want to say, you know, as a budget chair, I'm sure that all the state agencies, you know, we just passed our budget bill, Representative Hilty and I and Representative Wagenius, and it totaled about $1 billion of state spending, including all different funds. And I have no doubt that all the state agencies that we cover in that budget would have been really happy if we just appropriated $1 billion to them and let them figure it all out. And that may certainly be the case here, But I think our job as elected officials is to provide that balance of government. We're elected to represent our constituents, to set priorities for the state. And so I think that's our responsibility to pass a bill that reflects our values and what we think the state's best interest is. And I really appreciate that we need to do that in very close cooperation with our state agencies. And I think I have no doubt that they are working. I know they're working really, really hard. In fact, whenever we try to call Mr. DeFebri, he's at some meeting talking about stimulus funds. So I know they're working really hard on this. And they also, I think, have the best interests of the state in mind. So I think we can do this cooperatively, but I still think it's our responsibility to pass legislation. But we want legislation that the governor will sign as well.
Senator Dill, what's being passed around is actually the spreadsheet in zoomed in larger format, as you requested yesterday, so we can actually all see it. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I haven't missed too much of this conference committee. I was out just for a few minutes a couple of times yesterday, and I was 20 or 30 minutes late this morning. But I, as far as I can tell, we haven't actually decided anything yet, have we?
Senator Dill, we... last night, Senator Anderson and I, with staff, were able to I think, come to an agreement. I think staff is still working on language, but we had to fight tooth and nail to come to the agreement on the weatherization allocation. But we decided to, on the weatherization number, which is 100% of what the funds are available, being slightly facetious here. But we did actually come to a general agreement on... the weatherization. We hope we'll have some language that we can look at as a conference committee, it'll be an informal amendment, and we'll go through the open process of deliberation on the language as well as adopting the dollar amounts. We also, on the Energy Efficiency Conservation Block Grant, agreed to the 60-40 split that the using the Senate language or the Senate numbers on the spreadsheet, the 60% competitive block grants to local governments, and the 40% for local government building renovations. We also had a good discussion on the language for the public building renovations for the using the state energy program dollars for state government buildings and for local governments and school building renovations that Mr. Wasilowski just talked about, the state portion. And I think that the items that were outstanding to talk about. Oh, we also talked about the Duluth project, and I think we are close to full agreement there. I think we may have an opportunity to stretch that project a little further by adding a community, but we'll see. We're waiting to hear back from staff about a way to do a smaller community as well. And then we have the renewables and commercial and industrial is largely what we have. What we wanted to spend this morning talking about. And so we have not yet adopted anything formally. What I'd like to do is to move to renewables and kind of walk through the renewables proposals on both sides, and then we'll have to recess in about a half an hour. And I hope that we might be able to meet informally to make perhaps put together an offer on the spreadsheet, and then reconvene as soon as we can after our sessions with actual language in front of us as well, and roll up our sleeves and do the formal work of the conference committee later this afternoon and hopefully in time to for you to drive out into the sunset and shear your sheep tomorrow morning. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Great.
Sunrise.
Hopefully, it's a hopefully riding that saddle that's been properly procured as well. Not hearing other questions or discussion from members, we'll hear from Mr. DeFebri and then maybe dive into the renewables portion. Although I think actually Representative Hilty, I'm sorry. Representative, I'd forgotten that you had asked to raise an issue, concern that you have about the CNI grants.
I do, Mr. Chair. Before we get close to adopting language here, I was somewhat concerned with the Senate language on page R, or that begins on page R11, lines 7.32. Goes on to page R12. I don't need to identify all the lines, but I'm not sure who's a sponsor of this language, but it seems to me that basically what we're talking about here is another ethanol subsidy. It's pretty specific to biofuel facilities. I think there are a couple of biofuel facilities that have already done what's described here without this kind of incentive. And I think in the circumstances, and particularly considering that we have had a considerable discussion in the House, I don't know if that has occurred in the Senate, but about ethanol subsidies in general, I think that this is not something that I would really be supportive of going forward.
Yes. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I certainly understand what you're saying. I guess my question is, are you suggesting we shouldn't provide grants to any business that gets other subsidies of any kind, or is it just about ethanol plants? And my, I guess my second question would be, well, not a question, would be a comment that I think whether you like ethanol or don't like it, it seems to me that it's really a good idea to try to help ethanol plants reduce their carbon emissions. And that's what this is intended to do.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I understand the intent, but one of the discussions that we had pretty consistently in the House as we put our bill together was, you know, what really is the basic intent of this bill? It is a stimulus bill, and our focus consistently was on job creation and retention. If we can, so we're doing that by means of, you know, energy efficiency, renewable energy, but the real focus, I think, should be on the number of jobs created or retained in these efforts. You know, we're creating an economic stimulus and doing a good thing at the same time. There are any number of other ways that we could put people to work, and these are good ways to put people to work, but I don't see that this is something that would either create or retain jobs in any to any significant degree. And I think that this is something that politically would be very difficult to support.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I can't speak to whatever would be eligible for this in general. This did come from Senator Kubley's bill, but a couple comments I would make. One is looking at the House language on renewable fuels. I guess I would, if you think the issue is not, it's not about the subsidies per se, it's about whether it creates jobs, I just want to be clear about what your concern is. And if that's, just do you believe that the House language is more focused on creating jobs?
Representative Hilty.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, frankly, I've had a concern about both the House and the Senate language in terms of job creation with this section. But, I really think that that needs to be our focus.
Mr. Chair, just one other, I just want to point out one thing that I'm not sure if Senator Kubley's aware of this. I don't think we've talked about this, but, you know, I've talked about Rock 10 a lot. and the fact that this is connected to this issue. And I'll tell you why, because remember, we funded the process for Rock 10 to try to explore other ways to meet their energy needs. And we've talked a lot about what happened with energy efficiency, but we haven't talked very much about the other project result, which is that the community and the plant and the city, everyone agreed on a recommendation that they would get their, they would meet their energy needs with an anaerobic digester that would replace, that would create, or an anaerobic gasification project, sorry, not a digester, that would get, that would supply renewable natural gas or a substitute for natural gas to the plant to meet their, replace their need for the steam that they got from the old Xcel plant or from natural gas. And we were looking at three different sites where that natural, where that anaerobically produced gas substitute could be made, and one of them was at an ethanol plant, and then there were a couple of other possibilities. One was at a sugar beet processing plant, one was at a feedlot or something like that. And
yes,
that went directly, as well as the energy efficiency work, to saving those 500 jobs. And so there's an example where it may not be exactly replacing, it might not fit this definition exactly, but I think it probably, it would fit the second part about displacing fossil fuel energy input with energy derived from other kinds of renewables like an anaerobic gasification project.
Mr.
So there are some possibilities where that could be a huge job creator.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I agree. I think the thing that is causing me a problem here is simply that it's specific to biofuel facilities. I don't really see the necessity of that. I would be happy with the language if we just eliminated the word biofuel and instead of and in line 7.34, if we deleted and replaced it with two, it would read, money may also be used to improve the energy efficiency of facilities to displace fossil fuel energy inputs. That's not exactly the language, but that's, that would be more by intent. I don't see anything wrong with doing this. I don't see why it has to be specific to biofuels.
Well, Representative Hilty, I think you raise a very good point, but I don't think that the House nor Senate language yet is fully ripe in terms of determining how exactly we want to help businesses. I think we have to have some real constructive conversation. I think we're going to hear some more here from Senator Kubley and then Senator Prentner-Solon. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, it does seem to me that it does both create and retain jobs, Representative Hilty, and I'm not sure, you know, whether changing it or not would create or retain any more jobs. And you said you were in favor of that, so I'm not sure where that's coming about there, or, you know, how that fits together in a way that's better, you know, except that it would expand it and make it available to other folks. And I guess I'm not opposed to that. But, you know, I think, well, the anaerobic thing, too, Senator Anderson, that can be done with, you know, gasification. You know, gas is a byproduct of anaerobic digestion, so I think that could be done in terms of that process as well. I wouldn't exclude digestion from the anaerobic process, but I think, you know, and the term biofuel doesn't just refer to ethanol plants. You know, we've got, you know, the biodiesel component out there, and I think, you know, if we're going to make the transition, and I hope we do, to cellulosic forms of ethanol, it does seem to me that that's another step that industry needs to take. It needs to move away from strictly corn-based ethanol to a place where they're more efficient in terms of the amount of fuel that they can deliver from an acre, and I think the cellulosic piece would do that. So, you know, I don't know. I guess I would like to leave it in and speak in favor of leaving that in. I'm not opposed to expanding it to include other groups that that might be able to move in that direction as well. But, you know, I guess that would be my comments on that.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
And, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak in favor of keeping it in at this point, too, because I think that it would preclude some applications that might be favorable. And I received an email this morning, actually, and maybe many of you did, too, about a renewable company that currently produces solid biomass fuel cubes that they use for electricity generation and industrial application. But they'd like to have a commercial demonstration project that would produce a carbon-neutral energy feedstock out of this. And I just think that we don't want to, and they would like to be able to apply for a grant if that were available. I just think that those are some applications that might be useful.
Mr. Chair, I think that all the comments that have been made, I really think they could be reconciled. I think we're not that far apart because I think Representative Hilty was talking about support for the various kinds of renewable end products and just some disagreement about how the Senate went about it. So I think it sounds to me like we could meet what everybody said and find some common ground here, I think, likely.
Well, Senator Anderson, actually Senator Kubley and Senator Prentner-Solon, I happen to grab. I haven't seen that email, Senator Prentner-Solon. So if you might be able to either forward it to me or have your staff print out a copy that we could look at. Because to that very point, I grabbed this morning the final report from the cellulosic study that we funded in Chisago, Isanti, and Pine County. In addition to the White Earth project just north of you, I think, Senator Kubley, or in your district, I think north of you, right?
No, it's quite a ways north of me, Mr. Chair.
And then and then up on the range in Representative Dill's district, we did three projects in addition to a couple of other pieces. And we've been working in our community on the first in the state, and we think one of the first in the country, carbon-neutral industrial parks, where a cellulosic solid fuel combined heat and power plant would actually be the anchor of that, and the IREDES Mankato project, the partnership with Sweden, it's actually commercially available technologies that we'd be helping to get over the hump of the to do sort of beyond demonstration, maybe a cluster of these in the state. And so I would want to make sure that these parts of projects are also eligible. I think our House language about the solid form of biomass is really speaking to that opportunity. So I agree with you, Senator Anderson, that perhaps what we should do, we'll hear from Senator Kubley again in a second, but perhaps what we should do is ask Representative Hilty and Senator Kubley to try to work out some language with your input in mind in the next few hours. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, I'd like to simply remind the members, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, the subsidies given to the biofuel industry, but, you know, I'd like to mention once again that really there aren't any forms of energy out there that aren't subsidized. If there are, I'd like to know what they are. I guess, you know, at one point I went to a lot of trouble to look up how much subsidy from the federal government was given to different forms of energy, and nuclear is right up there at the top, but we seem to think that's a deal right now. So, you know, I don't know. And the coal industry is subsidized as well. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, where are the non-subsidized forms of energy that we use? And I think, you know, the renewable forms, while they get a little bit, are significantly lower than the other forms of energy that are subsidized by one level of government or another. So just that, you know, that we might keep in mind as the conversation goes forward.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. Members, it's a quarter to noon, and understand that there may be a vote on the House floor that House members, including Amendment I have a stake in, that we should probably be present for. And I know the Senate convenes at noon. So as much as I'd wanted to get through the renewable energy discussion, I think we can ask some questions informally and come back, and that'll be the only remaining business that we have to sort of delve into deeply in terms of getting more background. And hopefully I understand that staff may have some language as resulting from our discussions yesterday. So for now, what I'd like to do is recess to the call the chair, and we will try to do you know how long your session
I don't maybe? Really.
Okay. So
just have to stay in touch.
Members, just watch your emails, and we'll try to inform the public as well in a timely fashion. And thank you very much for the productive conversation this morning. We are in recess.